Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And we're back. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast at Radio MD, iHeart, and a number of other places. Thanks for listening. We have a great guest for you today. I say that great without talking to her much yet, but I got to read the book, Scared Selfless, My Journey from Abuse and Madness to Surviving and Thriving. Now, I don't usually do a lot of mental health parts to this program because it's not my area of expertise. But lately, and in the future, we're doing more and more as it's such a big problem in America and every place probably this podcast can be downloaded, which is every place. But this is a powerful book. This is incredibly powerful, incredibly engaging. I don't know why it's so engaging, but one of the comments by Jack Canfield on the back said, you have to read the book. And in his longer comment in the press release, he said, I couldn't put it down. I didn't intend to read it in one session. That's exactly the way I am with reading books for the show. I pick a little of them up every night and try and read it late at night after I've done my other work. Well, this book you can't put down. So I'm warning you, you're going to have to budget a couple hours for the first time you read this book. It is Scared Selfless, My Journey from Abuse and Madness to Surviving and Thriving with Dr. Michelle Stevens. Michelle, if I can call you that, or Dr. Stevens, and by the way, the book is, you can get more about it by Dr. Michelle Stevens, PhD, or is it MichelleStevensPhD.com, Michelle?
Yes, it's MichelleStevensPhD.com.
And this is, one is constantly wondering, how do pedophiles gain their mark? How can they be so successful? Why don't people run away immediately, even though they're acquaintances? So let's get to that part, and then let's get to the science of it. And to give people, after you were abused for a number of years, and I'm going to get to that in a second, you essentially rehabilitated yourself partially by working multiple jobs so you wouldn't be abused so much. And then with that money, you went through college and got a PhD in psychology, and now work as a successful psychologist, I think in California. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Now, let's go back. You were captured by or led to abuse, if you will, abused, starting at what age?
Yes, and it's really good to point out that I wasn't captured. Being abducted is actually incredibly rare. The way that most sexual abuse occurs is that pedophiles find new victims and find ways to, perpetrate their crimes. So this man, who was my primary abuser, was an elementary school teacher. And I was living with my single mother. I was 8 years old. And this guy started dating her. And, you know, much to like any single mother, all she wanted was some guy who would step in and say he'd be my father. And this guy offered that to her. Of course, what she didn't realize was that he was a pedophile.
And but when I say capture, he literally put you in a cage initially.
He did, yes. Right after my mother and he started dating, I think he was basically trying to test whether I would be. I saw him do this many, many times with children. He would sort of test out whether we would be compliant victims for him. And so in my case, he said to my mother, I want to have a special relationship with this little girl. And he asked if my mother would let me spend a long weekend with him alone. And once he had me alone, he pretty much immediately locked me in a cage, tortured me, and tried to use brainwashing techniques on me because he was trying to make me into his sex slave, which he was able to do.
Now, your mother then had to be complicit to a degree in this.
You know, it's an interesting thing with mothers. We call that mother blame. And there's a lot of assumptions that mothers are complicit. And what research shows is that many aren't, that they genuinely do not know. And when they do know, they take steps to get away from the man. In my mother's case, I would not say she was complicit. I would say, like many mothers, she simply chose to be in denial. It would have been incredibly inconvenient for her to face the truth of what he was doing to me, because she would have lost her home and her means of income. And so she chose to look the other way.
Well, but she still was working other jobs.
She was, yes.
In fact, he turned you into her competitor.
Yes. And many young girls who have been abused will know this dynamic where, you know, these guys are con men. They're very, very practiced at what they do. So he set up a dynamic in which my mother, who had very little self-esteem, was easily manipulated into seeing me as a romantic rival, even though I was only 8 years old.
And you yourself, at that age, ended up seeing yourself as a romantic rival. He was able to manipulate you that well.
Yeah, this is brainwashing. If you live with a master manipulator, you are brainwashed into seeing things his way, which I describe in the book, exactly the way that happened. Yes.
So did you write the book? Let's go back to the book is called Scared Selfless. It's a incredibly powerful I don't know how you describe it other than tale of how Michelle herself, Dr. Stevens, at age 8 is, when I use the word captured, I don't mean captured in the sense of captured from outside, because as Michelle points out and we'll discuss, most of the people who are abused children do it with people they know, either relatives, family members, or friends. So it wasn't like he had to capture you on the street, but he captured your mind and your soul for a period of time. So let's talk about how common this is. In other words, we're seeing more and more books, stories, articles, and attention in the medical field on mental illness. And clearly it seems to most of us that a pedophile has to be mentally ill.
You know, yes. it is a sexual orientation that a pedophile has, a true pedophile. Whether we call that mental illness, I don't know. You know, you can be a pedophile and not be a child molester. There are people who have a predilection for children who do not act out on that. There are also many men and some women who are not pedophiles. They don't have a predilection for children, but they will abuse children just because the opportunity presents itself. So, you know, there are many different circumstances here. The actual numbers, though, of child sexual abuse are staggering. They are absolutely staggering. If you ask adult women if they have ever been sexually abused in childhood, 40% of them will say yes, and about 13% of men.
So what you'd say, and one of the interesting things, I'm a physician at the Cleveland Clinic in my day job, and I ran the Wellness Institute, where we had holistic psychotherapists, and you would, in the what we call the 6-day learning process of this holistic psychotherapy, and although I have no psychotherapy training, I went through it just to learn what was going on in our institute, since it was getting such remarkable results. And what I learned is most of the psychotherapists have gone through some psychic trauma in their youth or in their childhood. And I was amazed at how common it was. both among the psychotherapists and among people in general. And so living this terribly normal life that I did, or terribly maybe abnormal since I was never abused to my knowledge, and that's another point that you bring out, that, that we repress a lot of these memories. It seems like almost the people who aren't abused are the unusual ones in today's society.
It can sometimes feel like that. That's actually about a little less than half of all human beings will experience at least one severe traumatic event in their lifetime. And that's over your whole lifetime. That's not just childhood.
But in childhood, it looked, you said it was 40% of women and 13% of men were abused.
Or sexually abused at least one time. That's true.
And if you include that sexual abuse, there's other abuse as well.
Yeah, right. There's physical abuse, emotional abuse, and then the numbers grow, neglect, things like that. So obviously there is a very high percentage of people who endure, you know, some type of abusive childhood, whether that's severe or whether it's limited to a few times. But the research is very clear that even one instance of childhood abuse will, in 80% of cases of people, lead to at least one diagnosable mental illness. So there's an incredibly direct link between child abuse and mental illness.
Now, the next part that I wanted to get at was in your own story is after an initial, quote, enslavement in this cage, you became... he used techniques, Gary, and I'll just put his first name there, Gary used techniques on you that captured you, essentially, whether you call it the same thing that Patty Hearst had or whatever, but you become unable almost to escape. Describe that process,
correct.
Would you?
Right. Yes, and I call it brainwashing. You'll hear it sometimes in the press called Stockholm Syndrome, which it's not. That's a different phenomenon. But people always want to know, when you see Elizabeth Smart and the fact that police came up to her and she denied her own name at least four times when police came up to her, even though she could have said, yes, I'm Elizabeth Smart, and they would have taken her away right away. J.C. Dugard, who stayed with her captor for 19 years, even though police were constantly in the house checking up on him because he was a criminal. And people go, why? Why does this happen? Why don't battered spouses, battered wives leave their husband? Here is why. I call it brainwashing. And what I mean by that, sometimes it's explicitly done, and it's very effective at brainwashing techniques, or it can be implicit. It's about fear and violence. The techniques are always the same. Tyrants use incredible violence at the beginning to essentially shock their victims into submission. And then after that, all they need to do is threaten once in a while to be violent, and it's enough to keep people enslaved, essentially. People lose the ability to actually take care of themselves when they have been shocked by violence.
And another part of it is the person doing this isolates you, so you have essentially one person who teaches you fact, so that the facts you learn, the world view is changed because of that isolation.
Right. And it's so interesting because these dynamics are the same whether you're dealing with one guy who abducts one child, or whether you're dealing with a tyrant that runs the country. What is one of the first things you always do? You want to monopolize what your victims know. So if you are running a country, you try to get rid of all of the press because that could allow people to know the truth. You want to monopolize all of the information. And husbands will do this with wives. If you get an abusive husband, he will do everything in his power to cut his wife off from all of the people who could help her. And in this way, they isolate the victims so that, again, they can't seek help or outside resources.
Now, despite that, you, what I would call, escaped the trance or escaped the brainwashing. How did you do that? And by the way, as the listeners know, since I do read the book, I'm asking questions that I may know the answer to, but it's just so fascinating, I want to bring it out for the listeners.
Great. Yes, I eventually, you know, the further that any victim is away from their abuser, then the trance wears off. We saw this in the Patty Hearst case. At first, she was still completely brainwashed, but over time, it wore off. This happens with anyone. This is why you have to get battered wives away from the husband. Once people start to actually feel safe, like the abuser can't get to them, then that hold that the abuser has over them begins to wear off. So I went away to college. That's when I left my abuser. But his spell on me did not really wear off until I moved 3,000 miles away to California. And at that point, I really started to understand all that he had done to me.
But you weren't in the trance. So in other words, when you got the jobs during high school, you worked multiple jobs essentially to be less in his control, it seemed to me.
Yes, that is true. I worked multiple jobs to stay away from the house. I desperately wanted to just be away from home and be as independent as possible. At the point that I was in high school, he was a pedophile. So by the time I was in high school, he was no longer really abusing me. That was all over. So, but I did not at all at that stage when I was still living with him, I was not able to face all the things that he had done to me. It was still too scary.
Now, he was doing this to other kids at that time.
Many. Dozens, if not hundreds, over about two decades.
And
some of them I was aware of at the time. Since the book came out, many, many others have emailed me and messaged me to let me know that he victimized them, too.
And what happened to him, and how did what happened to him happen?
Eventually, you know, what I've learned since publishing the book is that for decades, kids knew that he was a pedophile. Many children complained to their parents. Parents then called the school to complain about him. There were teachers that complained to the administration about him. But as we see in so many of these stories, the Catholic priests would just, there was just a story in the New York Times about the Choate School, Horace Mann a couple of years ago, the administration tried to cover it all up. So for many, many years, nothing happened to him. Eventually, one little girl persisted. They tried to shut her up, but she persisted in her claims that he had molested her. And eventually, the prosecutor was called. They conducted an investigation, immediately found two more little girls who said he had molested them, and they arrested him.
And now, what is your relationship with him now and with your mother now?
Sure. He died about 20 years ago. I don't think I could have published this book if he was alive. As soon as I sort of got out of college, I moved away from my parents and started dealing with what had happened to me, and I basically cut off all communication with both of them. After he died, over time, I started to have a bit of a relationship with my mother again. So we have a superficial relationship where we call each other once in a while.
Now, one of the things that is clear from this is, at least to me, is this led to your choice of career and to really being excellent at your career. Now, do you feel that way?
It absolutely led to my choice of career. It's so interesting that you say that therapists that you know, many of them have suffered trauma. You know, again, there is a direct link between childhood trauma and mental illness. Very direct link. I suffered incredible mental illness as a result of the trauma I suffered. I had horrible PTSD. I had a dissociative disorder, depression, anxiety. I tried to kill myself several times. So in the course of all of that, I made a decision that I wanted to get well, that I really wanted to be mentally healthy. So I started seeking out therapy. I started reading tons of books on trauma psychology. And eventually I knew so much about it that it just seemed like a natural progression to get my PhD.
We've been talking with Dr. Michelle Stevens, author of this book that you can probably tell I'm fascinated with, and the story, Scared Selfless, My Journey from Abuse and Madness to Surviving and Thriving. MichelleStevensPhD.com is the website. This is a book that is, although it's a serious book, it is a fast page-turning book, and it's fascinating. Michelle, I've got to say to you, you somehow wield the science and the story so well together that one is totally captivated. And for those who don't like science, you can't avoid it, and it's really well done and well integrated. For those who want only science and not the story, you're going to be fascinated by the whole thing. It is brilliantly written, and so I can't tell you, thank you enough for being on the show. Scared Selfless by Michelle Stevens. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. Radio MD and iHeart and a whole bunch of others rate us, download us every Tuesday, a new one. This is number 839. Please stay tuned and come back next week. We have another great guest, and this is another guest we have that's going to talk about something related to mental illness and mental functioning. It's called Mirror Touch. It's by a physician, Joel Salinas, another doc. Notes from a Doctor Who Can Feel Your Pain. But I want to tell you, of all the books and of all the guests we've had in the last year, Scared Selfless has to be, if not the top, one of the top that I've ever read. Thanks very much, Dr. Stevens.